Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about the nationwide rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. Perhaps you've heard of that, in between all the bogus claims of widespread election fraud. So today on the roundup, we're talking about how to overcome the challenges of COVID vaccine distribution and how to overcome the challenges of COVID vaccine acceptance. To reveal the solutions to both challenges are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchinson, partner at Transformation Capital. Hey, Dave. Hey, Julie. How are you doing this morning? Dave?
I'm wearing a green sweater and beginning to get into the holiday spirit. Terry and I are planning to watch Love Actually tonight, which is our favorite holiday movie. So it's all sparkles here, Dave.
Wow, sounds great. Julie?
You know, with my kids around 24/7, we are watching holiday movies every night. So Dave, I know what that feels like. But I personally feel like we've sort of landed on the moon this week. All this coverage about the vaccine, it's exciting. And at the same time, you know, I know another person who just died. So it's a weird, surreal time, but I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can be right now and spread my positive outlook like holiday cheer.
Okay. Well, thanks to both and welcome to today's episode. Now, before we talk about COVID vaccine distribution and acceptance, let's talk about COVID-related gift giving. The holidays right around the corner. Dave, are you planning on giving any COVID-related gifts to friends or family this year?
Does liquor count?
It always counts, Dave.
Yeah. We're sending themed embroidered pillows from Cat Studios to our many nieces and nephews. They're personalized and very homey, and I think they'll associate these pillows for a long time with life under COVID.
Nice. Julie, how about you? Are you wrapping any COVID-related gifts as stocking stuffers or holiday grab bags?
Well, my firm is sending Let's Get Checked COVID test kits to everybody in my family for Christmas. So that's sort of a nice gesture.
Wow.
But no, we're not giving any COVID-related items for Christmas.
Got it. I did buy a, well, let me look at, okay, nobody's here on this floor of the house listening. So I did buy a pulse oximeter, and I'm going to wrap that up and put it under the tree from Dr. Fauci to the Berta family. So
not from Santa.
Not from Santa. We believe in science here.
Very creative. I love it.
All right. Let's talk about vaccine distribution challenges. Dave, what do you see as the one or two biggest COVID vaccine distribution challenges? And how do you see those challenges ultimately being solved or managed?
Well, in a phrase, the biggest distribution challenge is vexing vaccine variations. Little bit of science here. All vaccines create molecules that trigger the body's immune response system. With COVID, the vaccines do this using very different technologies. So we can't fully appreciate the magnitude of the distribution challenge without understanding the different types of vaccines being developed and their timing in coming to market. To illustrate this point, let's examine the six drugs that Operation Warp Speed is purchasing for COVID-19 vaccinations. Pfizer and Moderna, the two being most talked about right now, use messenger RNA technology to trigger the immune response. Those vaccines, of course, are available now and should last in the U.S. through the end of February. AstraZeneca and J&J, their vaccines use a viral vector technology. Call me later if you want to know what that is exactly. And they're on target for public vaccinations by February or March. Novavax and Sanofi's vaccines use subunit particles to trigger the immune response, and they should be ready by mid-year for public vaccinations. So there are significant differences in the timing, efficacy, delivery mechanics, storage requirements, and side effects of these different types of vaccines, messenger RNA, viral vector, and subunit particles. Usually, public health officials apply a mix and match process to make the different vaccines uniform from the recipient's perspective. You don't want people trying to figure out which vaccine they should take. They should just get the vaccine. So that's not going to be possible as manufacturers rush the vaccines to market as soon as they receive FDA approval. And when you think about the hundreds of millions of people that have to receive the vaccines, the distribution process itself is D-Day, the moon landing, and hands across America, you know, all rolled into one. So I've spent my couple of minutes describing the distribution problem, and it is vast. The solution involves another three-word phrase, truth, transparency, and trust. And I think we'll get to that in the second part of our show today.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, how would you grade COVID vaccine distribution at this early point? And what do we need to bump up that grade, assuming you're not giving it an A?
Well, someone I truly respect said this week, you know, it's just hard to believe it's that simple. Meaning, how are we really going to pull this off? And, you know, at this point, I have to say, I'd give us an A for thinking about so many of the potential risks and challenges in what's ahead of us. But just in this first week, I think we get a pretty solid B minus on the execution. I hate to give it a C, that's so negative, but the downgrade is really aimed at the federal government for two reasons. First, since the federal government decided not to mandate how states distribute vaccines, some of these anticipated issues are just left in states' hands, and many would say that states don't have sufficient funding or access to kind of the right equipment that's, you know, in short supply right now. And the second reason is we're already seeing a decrease just this week in how many doses are expected to be distributed next week. And that's creating more logistical difficulty than even all the logistics of cold storage and double dosing and the like. And it's hard to imagine that we could add more logistical challenge to this scenario. So, you know, I'd bump it to an A if the states had more money to manage distribution, predictability of supply, especially with the double dosing vaccines, and assistance coordinating things like cold storage, transportation, and other basic distribution requirements. And I saw a funny quote this week. It's amazing that the Pfizer vaccine needs to be stored in negative 70 degrees Celsius in places where you can't even get a cold Coke. You know, I'd also give it an A, Dave, if organizations managing the actual vaccine technology had more technology, or frankly, in many cases, just good old-fashioned paper organization, like really good binders, because tracking these double doses and the people is going to be tough. And the labor to follow up with all those people, I think is going to be pretty vast, and we may be underestimating that. Many people never even go to the drugstore to pick up their drugs. They never show up for their second hepatitis shot. They don't return to the doctor when that's recommended. So we can't just assume that people are going to show up for the second dose of the vaccine. We have to track them and bring them back. And I had to chuckle also when I read that Operation Warp Speed said it expects to inoculate 20 million Americans in December. And today is December 18th, and we have 2.9 on the street. So we have a ways to go in the next few weeks.
Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments on distribution?
Well, I'd amplify her observation on the federal system and the way we operate in this country, which is the federal government sets guidelines, but the states actually execute. And in many cases, that's great because it creates laboratories for different approaches and we can evaluate over time which work better. In this case, however, it creates substantial opportunity for variation in performance. A to F on Julie's scale. So I'm expecting, as this rollout continues in vaccines and gains steam, we'll see suboptimal vaccinations in many parts of the country. The other point I'd make is there's still a lot we don't know, and we won't know until the vaccine gets into the marketplace in bigger ways. Allergic reactions during the trials, they deliberately did not pick people that were subject to allergic reaction, and now we're starting to see some of those emerge. So anticipating those and dealing with them is obviously really important. The duration of the immunity, don't know. We'll figure that out over time. That's also a big question mark. And finally, we do know that the vaccines prevent the disease COVID-19 from taking hold, but we don't know if and to what extent they prevent transmission. So getting a shot doesn't necessarily mean that people can't transmit the disease to others. So there's still a lot to learn, and we're back to vaccine variation as a big problem.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about COVID vaccine acceptance by the public. Julie, what's your read on how willing people are to get the vaccine, and what would you do to get more people on board with the plan?
Yeah, I honestly think this is going to be the tougher part, Dave. I've seen a wide range of data from the Vaccine Confidence Project stating that 41% of Americans are willing to take the vaccine, to Pew's research that says in November we were at 60% willing, which is up from 51% in September. So if you believe Pew, confidence is on the rise. However, just to remind us all, our target is at least 70% for herd immunity. So like everything else we've seen in the pandemic, some of our hardest to reach populations, you know, are the least trusting of our healthcare system and the vaccine. So we're seeing a breakdown in willingness among different races, ethnicities, socioeconomic groups, et cetera. You know, I think people in general have anxiety about the vaccine and its safety, which is understandable given the amount of time it's taken to get to market. And there's obviously the general vaccine concerns about the fact that it's not natural and can do more harm than good. And we've seen those concerns for a long time. And of course, we're seeing some over-indexing on the libertarian perspective of you can't tell me what to do, you can't make me take that vaccine. But in general, I think all of these have to do with just the massive trust issues that we have in general with society right now, but even prior to the last 4 years. You know, trust issues in the government and trust issues, especially in an industry like pharma, have always been high. So it's creating problems for this effort. So what would I do? I would engender more trust in as many ways as possible, you know, visibly showing more people taking the vaccines, leaders of all kinds, movie stars, musicians, respected community and church leaders, just bringing visibility to the trust of people taking the vaccine. I'd bring people along, you know, listen, this is community building. Listening and responding to people's concerns in a transparent and authentic way can go a long way. And we've actually had months to be thinking about how to do this, and we haven't done it in a large way. And getting back to community organizations, leveraging churches, trusted entities to be part of not only the marketing, but potentially the distribution network could be very helpful. And of course, to the extent that we can make it free for as many people as we can, that's going to really be very helpful. And we're coming out of this phase where relationships are just broken, and we need to rebuild around people and science, leveraging our most trusted guides.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, what's your take on the level of vaccine acceptance? What things are holding people back? And what creative solutions do you recommend to push the number higher?
Well, I want to amplify Julie's statement that we have to have a campaign on steroids to win the hearts and minds and trust of as many Americans as we can. That's going to be a daunting challenge. I saw a poll this week that said that 44% of Republicans believe that Bill Gates is using the vaccines to implant location devices. there's another segment, more in the African American and Latino communities, that's saying, I'm not going to take a Trump vaccine. So politics is affecting public health in big ways. And as Julie mentioned, to achieve herd immunity, we have to get to 70%, which means that we need to get people that are anti-vaxxers right now into the program. And to do that, the traditional strategies aren't going to work. You know, you can't talk to a teenage girl about not using tanning booths because she'll get cancer at some point in time, potentially. You have to tell her that's going to accelerate wrinkles. You know, that seems to work better. So we have to get into the pictures and the heads of the people that are anti-vaxxers and come up with persuasive strategies to bring them on board. I'm reminded of the Don't Mess with Texas campaign from the 80s that the Texas Department of Transportation rolled out to address littering. And, you know, calling people litter bug wasn't working with young men, particularly those without college education. But the Don't Mess with Texas campaign played to sort of this inherent macho instinct among many Texans. And they saw a dramatic decline in litter over the next 10 years, dropped by 80%+. Maybe we can come up with a, you know, stick it to COVID campaign of, or something like that, that goes at these target populations. Because at the end of the day, we don't really care how we get there. We just have to get there. So let's call up the great advertising minds in this country. And instead of selling Coke and chewing tobacco, let's get them to figure out how to get into the minds of people we need to persuade and, you know, bring them on board. It's a big challenge, but it's also a great opportunity to create a sense of national unity where we haven't had one in a very long time.
Got it, Dave. Thank you. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
I would just double down on Dave's suggestion about advertising firms. This is a place where our minds, but I think some of the firms could jump in and dedicate some resources to make this happen. You know, what the Ad Council, I think, has planned to do is very much around rebuilding confidence in science. And to Dave's point, that's not exactly going to be a short-term win with consumers today. And, you know, the one other thing I would just mention that we haven't talked about yet is kind of this fascinating issue around the security around these vaccines. And while the security itself is maybe more of a distribution issue, you know, there's a lot of concern that we'll see some fake vaccination efforts on the part of obviously criminals, but people claiming to be doctors having vaccines and charging for them. So, you know, I think we have to be really thoughtful also about mixed messaging that's going to go on out there because profiteering continues to be part of our culture.
Yeah, it sounds like we'll have to get the FTC involved, right?
Perhaps.
False advertising. All right. Now, as always on the roundup, let's talk about next week. Julie, it is the week of Christmas. Will big healthcare news take a few days off like the rest of us?
Well, I'm sure COVID's not going to take the few days off. So given what we're seeing with the vaccines, I'm going to now start to follow Dave's lead and just say we're going to see a lot more coverage on the good, bad, and the ugly there. And I'm going to, in addition for still helping for some CMS leadership for Christmas, hope we see more personal stories about the vaccine and role models and just less hate.
Yeah, always a good thing. Dave, what's the big healthcare news waiting to be unwrapped next week?
Well, Mike Pence and his wife got shots this morning publicly. So that's one of the personal stories that could help with this. But I've been thinking a lot about an F. Scott Fitzgerald quote that relates to what Julie said right at the top of the program. You know, we're really living in the worst and best of times. There's death and disease all around us, and yet light at the end of the tunnel. And Fitzgerald said that the test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see things that are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. Well, while I don't think defeating COVID is hopeless, it's still a monumental challenge. And so we have to be able to see the world as it is and yet act on it with the belief that we can really get COVID out of our nation's collective health system by mid-year next year. And, you know, it is the holiday season, and I want to be optimistic, too. I think if we can marshal the collective effort to do this and bring aboard people that have such distrust of government, that we can maybe in small and maybe big ways restore faith in public institutions, build a better sense of public trust. And if we can do that with COVID, we can start to do it with some of the other big challenges that confront us as a nation and a world, actually.
Great. Thanks, Dave. That's excellent. And thank you, Julie, too. Much appreciated. That's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You can also find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. We're going to take a short break from the roundup to celebrate Christmas Day and New Year's Day. We'll be back with our first episode of the new year on January 8th. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.